What's up, everybody? Before we get today's episode going, I want to remind you to please check out and support our PowerPlay Patreon page. For just $2 a month, you get access to all of our bonus content, like drafts and trivia, and you get the episodes ad-free and one day early. So please take the time and support this independent podcast by going to patreon.com/thepowerplaypod. That's patreon.com/thepowerplaypod to support the boys.
Hockey. Let's do that hockey.
It can't be a one-man show out there. Gotta have all the boys involved. Gotta be willing to go to the dirty areas.
Hey, what's up, all you NHL and all you hockey fans? Kevin Weeks here. Just want to say welcome to the Power Play Podcast.
We would now like to welcome onto the show current Fayetteville Marksman head coach Jesse Kalicki. I hope I pronounced that right. Jeeker told me how to pronounce it before, and I hope
That's not what I said, but...
Is that not what you said?
That's not what I said.
What did you say?
Kalicki,
damn it.
Am I right on that?
You did.
It's a tough one, though, so, you know what, I don't take offense to it. It's not a lot of people get it right, so it was a good shot. It was a good effort.
Yeah, I normally mess up words a lot on the show, so that's kind of my thing. So it really fits the show that I messed it up right away. So what's up, man? How you doing through this quarantine time?
Yeah, doing good. It's a weird time, I think, for everybody, but you know, I think we're getting through. North Carolina starting to open up here a little bit, and you know, I think like anybody, you're just making the best of a pretty crappy situation, and nice to hopefully get a little bit of normalcy back in our lives here soon.
What have you been doing during this time?
A lot of, you know, I think it's been mostly work-wise. It's been a lot of personal career development. So. Books, you know, reading stuff, watching a lot of coaching videos online. And then other than that, it's been a lot of time at home here with my wife and our dog. And we got away to Myrtle Beach last weekend. So nice to get away for a little bit. And, you know, here we are.
How far is that from you guys?
It's not far. It's like an hour and a half.
Oh, man.
So it was nice. South Carolina's completely open. So it's crazy, you know, getting back into restaurants and things like that. It's nice to feel like a human again.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, people in Jacksonville, like, that's like Myrtle Beach seems to be the place where everyone vacations to here in Jacksonville. Like, that's really the place that's talked about all the time. We have our own beach. It's not that great, but everyone talks about going up to Myrtle Beach. That's it.
I don't know. I love that beach. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because you're not from here.
Atlantic Beach. I loved Atlantic Beach.
Yeah, I always wondered where people who live in a place where other people vacation, like, where do you guys go vacation?
Yeah, Myrtle Beach is it. That is 100% where people go. And it's like that seems to be the common vacation spot for everybody, though. But you talked about like watching things and things like that, and I have to jump into it right away. I was perusing through your Twitter and I saw a hot take about Home Alone and you not liking the movie Home Alone. What is with that? What's going on?
Oh man, I think it's one of those movies. I think people are brainwashed to like this. It's not a good movie, you know. I mean, a little bit of a hot take there, but
that's why I had to ask it. Once I saw it, I was like, "Holy shit, he doesn't like Home Alone." I feel like that's a hot take right there. What's your favorite Christmas movie then?
Oh man, favorite Christmas movie. That's tough, and I think you know, my wife would tell you I'm not much of like a holiday person. You know, my wife handles most of that stuff. So, yeah, that's tough. I'd have to think about it. I really probably Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Those are the movies, you know.
Jeeker, you seem like you were hurt by his Home Alone opinion.
No, I kind of like, I understand it because it is played so much every year around Christmas time. It's like one of the most popular movies out there, obviously, but. I mean, it is a good movie once a year. I could deal with it once a year. But if it's like one of those things where people watch it like throughout the year, like not around Christmas time, then I can see the annoyance of it 100%.
Yeah, it's kind of like A Christmas Story. I feel like A Christmas Story is like one of those movies too that's played like 24/7 on Christmas Day. It's just it's overplayed. It's wild. But now we can get into the hockey talk, though. I know I jumped. We normally get into like the personal talk afterwards at the end of everything, but we just jumped right into that. But now we can get into the hockey talk, though. So you spent time, you played major juniors in Canada, and then you move on to play in the SPHL. What was that transition like going from major juniors to the SPHL?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly was a change. You know, I was really young, you know, bypassed college and didn't know exactly what I was getting into, but it was a different time. But you know, the SPHL was a lot different back then. You know, I always think, you know, if I didn't do that and didn't go there, a lot of the things in my life wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have, you know, got to meet my wife. I wouldn't have had the job that I have now. So, you know, I'm not a huge believer in the saying that everything happens for a reason, but, you know, I'm glad the choices that, that I made took me down that path. And I'm also glad the SPHL has improved a lot since those days. And, it's, you know, it's taken me down the path and I'm happy I'm here.
So what made you choose the SPHL over like the college route?
Yeah, I mean, I had some, I was originally going to go to school and I had some things that kind of fell through and, you know, I had options to, you know, after playing in the States kind of fell through a school, I was going to stay home and play at a college in Edmonton where I'm from. But, I just decided that, you know, school was always going to be there and, you know, you only get so many years to play. And, you know, I wanted to see if I could do it. And, you know, took me down that path and got to tour the SPHL and play in a lot of different places. So, you know, I'm happy I did it.
Where was your favorite place to play in the SPHL?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm one of the few people that's, you know, pretty fortunate. I think I got to, I kind of got the trifecta. I got to play in Knoxville, in Huntsville and in Pensacola. So, you know, I got to play in three really good places, you know, and then followed it up with a stint in Louisiana, which wasn't a great spot, but, you know, the other ones were really good. And as far as our league goes, those are kind of the cream of the crop places to play. So, you know, it's tough to narrow it down, but I mean, I'll always be loyal to Huntsville with, you know, winning a championship there and you know, getting to the finals another year and then starting my coaching career there. So I'm a little bit biased, you know, towards that city.
So what was it like winning that championship? Like I said, I scrolled through your Instagram or your Twitter page, and I saw a picture of you celebrating with a cup with a scar on your mouth. It seemed like a great time. What was it like winning that cup and celebrating?
Yeah, I mean, it's the best feeling, you know, it really is. You work so hard to finally get there. And, you know, beside my desk here sits the, you know, the picture.
Nice.
You know, doing it. You know, I think that's a, you know, a reminder to myself of, you know, how much work that went into it, but also the feeling that came after and having my family there and getting to do it with such a good group was, it was special. So, I don't know. It's tough to put into words. You know, people ask that, and it's just like it's, you know, for that hour or so that you're going through the celebration and really in it, it's just, it's pure joy. You know, it really is.
Yeah, it definitely looked like a good time with the celebration for sure. So, what's that transition like going from being a player on that team and to going to be the assistant coach? I believe I asked Corey this when he was on our show, but it seems like it's got to be such a tough transition to go from being boys with everybody in the locker room to now being their coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not an easy transition, and for me, it was maybe a little bit easier because we had a lot of turnover. We had a lot of turnover when I went from playing to coaching. So, you know, that made it a little bit easier. You know, I think it's one of those things you push it to the side and you really focus on, being there in the moment in your job. And truthfully, once you make the switch from playing to coaching, it's, you just have so much other stuff on your plate that you don't really even have time to think about that. Cause you're trying to deal with, you know, I tell Corey and I talk about it all the time. I mean, our job is to put out fires. That's basically all the fire every day, and you got to find where you got to put it out. So it's part of the job, and I think you know, the guys who do it well make that transition, and the guys who struggle to separate themselves usually aren't coaching very long.
Did Jeker, was Jeker responsible for any fires in Fayetteville?
No. Jeker was good. He was you know, pretty low maintenance, and he showed up every day and he worked his worked his tail off. And I think, you know, as a coach, you learn to appreciate those guys who are lower maintenance. And it's certainly not the case for most guys, but you certainly come to appreciate those guys a lot more.
Sandbox would definitely say I wasn't low maintenance, but definitely I'm glad that you thought I was low maintenance. Our court manager would probably not agree with that statement. But my question, I never really asked you this, Jesse. Why, like, what made you switch to coaching when you did? I asked Corey the same thing. Like, is there like a specific, just the opportunity, or was it just kind of one of those things where you're like, had enough, like, I want to just move on?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's just, it was purely opportunity. You know, if I didn't maybe get offered the job, I might have maybe continued to play, might have, you know, maybe looked to enter the workforce. I don't know. But I got offered the job, and, you know, really didn't even think about it, you know, talked about it for a day or so with my wife, and then made the decision that it was right. And I think, you know, with only roughly 200 professional coaching jobs in North America total, if somebody offers you one of those, you usually don't say no, because good chance that job's probably not going to be there if you want to wait.
Yeah, it's definitely, Corey was saying the same thing. It's so tough to get a job in the coaching world today. Why do you think it is that way?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think I don't know if it's maybe a lot of older coaches maybe getting recycled, and I mean, truthfully, like, none of us get a pension out of this, right? So it's not like you can coach for X amount of years and then you can sit back on your pension. I mean, you know, we're going to be coaching for a long time. And I also think, I mean, there's a lot of really, 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 really good coaches. And I think it makes the field extremely competitive, and a lot of people want to coach. So it's not easy. And certainly when you get a job, you need to appreciate it, because there's always somebody looking to take it from you. No different than a player. You know, I think, you look at Travis's case when he played, like, so many guys would A, love to be on the team, and then B, get the ice time that he gets, right? And I think if you don't appreciate that stuff and you're looking, you know, you're always looking either for the next move or maybe take your foot off the gas when you get the job, again, you're not going to have the job very long.
Yeah, especially too for you, because you were a goalie, and that job, there is hardly any openings as a goaltender, and your job is literally so the guy who's supposed to replace you is like right behind you, so you have to deal with that. So what was it like growing up to be a goalie? How'd you start that?
I mean, my dad was a goalie. You know, probably, like, in hindsight, probably wouldn't have done it. There's not a lot of 5'8" goalies playing in the NHL.
5'8", come on, man.
You know,
come
so
on.
Five nine.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
You know, not a lot of smaller goalies, so you know, it was an uphill battle from the start, but since I stopped playing, I put my gear on, I put goalie gear on once, and it was twice, and it was for a morning skate in Huntsville when I was the assistant coach, because one of our goalies was sick, and then the other time I went out at Christmas time for a practice. Other than that, and then actually this past summer I sold all my equipment, so I don't even have stuff anymore. So
oh man,
I don't think I'll ever put the gear back on again in my life.
No men's league.
We tried getting him to be a practice goalie a couple times this year, and he made that very clear that it will not happen.
Oh man,
no, never. I don't think I'll ever. I mean, if I play, you know, like when I play and stuff, like beer league and anything like that, it's always as a player. I mean, it's way more fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I feel like I missed out on. I feel like I missed out on a totally different game my whole life. So it's fun to get that side of things now. And I don't see myself ever putting it on again.
Who'd you grow up idolizing, you being a smaller goalie? I know my brother, who also does a show, who's not here with us right now, he is a shorter, smaller goaltender. He grew up idolizing Mike Richter. Who's guys that you idolized?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, growing up in you know, Edmonton and during the heydays of the Oilers, like, you know, you look at guys like Grant Fuhr and Andy Moog, and those guys were all smaller and super successful. And, you know, growing up then, you know, we had Tommy Salo, and I was a huge Oilers fan growing up. So for me, it was basically whoever's in net for the Oilers. And, you know, it's been a rough couple of years for us, but I don't know. I guess, is it considered the Oilers in the playoffs?
They are considered. Yes, they are in the playoffs. Yep.
Really? Does a play-in round count as the playoffs?
I didn't say it when my buddies were talking to me about it the other day. They were like, the Rangers made the playoffs, because I'm obviously a big Ranger fan. And right. I'm like, I don't think that's how it works. But everyone, it's when like NHL releases the news, it says the playoff teams and it has them in it. So I guess technically it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little scary, you know. I think the Oilers were, I mean, they were going to make the playoffs this year. I mean, and then, you know, now we get saddled with Chicago, who was almost had 0% chance to make it. But I read something today. Patty Kane is like, he has like 49 points in his last 19 games against the Oilers. So. Oh. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little nervous.
Oh man, are you okay with this situation here? Are you okay with a 2014 playoff, or what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. Like, I think, I mean, you know, you're a Rangers fan, yep. So obviously,
I'm happy that we got in. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, partially, like, did the NHL tailor to some of those bigger markets, New York, Chicago?
Oh yeah,
kind of markets. Like, of course they did, but it's. I mean, I think everybody's happy that hockey's going to be back, but selfishly, like, do I wish the Oilers weren't playing a best of five? Yeah, I mean, of course I do, and not get Patrick Kane. Like, you know, the only worst case scenario probably would have been getting Carey Price.
Yeah.
Well, we got him.
Yeah, I was about to say.
So. The only good thing about that is Carey Price's numbers against Pittsburgh in the last, like, 7 or 8 years are trash, so I'm not concerned at all. So, side note to that. But
oh, yeah, I mean – I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting, right? Because everybody's going to be healthy now. Everybody's had some time off. You know, you look at it from a Rangers perspective.
Chris Kreider. Chris Kreider broke his foot after we gave him that massive deal. Chris Kreider broke his foot and wouldn't have been back until round one of the playoffs. And then now, hey, it's round one of the playoffs now, and he's back. So it's good for us.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it too, like who starts in net for the Rangers?
Oh man! Oh now, hey, oh, okay, you're a goalie, so you get this kind of stuff. Yeah, no, the Ranger situation is. Wait a second, this just got flipped. Nightmare. This just got flipped to you asking the question, but this is something to me that I've talked about so many times in my school assignments and everything. Just talking about how the Rangers are in absolute chaos right now with Shesterkin, Lundqvist, and Georgiev. It sucks to say you don't go with Lundqvist. Because, I mean, he hasn't been the best goalie this season for the Rangers, but this is playoff experience. How do you go away from that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the argument, right? Like, you know, now maybe guys like – I think about, like, a guy like Pekka in Nashville who's had, you know, almost – you know, arguably one of his worst seasons he's had probably in the last 8 to 10 years, and now he's had basically 2 months off, so – you know, in my mind as a coach, I'm thinking like, hey, we got a fresh start here. Like, let's, you know, maybe it's a brand new season mentally. He's probably rested, relaxed. Like, you can kind of turn the page. So guys like Lundqvist, Rene, guys like that, that's going to be the question. And that's realistically, like, that's going to be the reason for some of these teams. Like, how far are they going to go, you know, with some of these decisions that these coaches are going to make?
Yeah, well, as a goalie, I mean, I could speak as a player, like, last season when I didn't start skating until July, like, I was bad when I started skating. Like, is it different for goalies? Because I'm sure reaction times are a little bit, you know, a little bit lower and things like that when you don't see anything for a while. I mean, unless these goalies are getting private ice, which I don't think they are.
Lundqvist is
a factor into it.
Lundqvist has gotten some, but not like enough.
You see what I mean? Like, so if they take off from March till July or whenever they're allowed to start skating, because that – and then they only have 3 weeks. Are they going to be able to be back in quote game shape? Like,
yeah,
it's different conditioning to reaction time. So
yeah, I mean that's the question, right? Like, and you know, I think I read somewhere they get what 2 or 3 exhibition games too. So
yeah,
it's not like you're talking like, hey, we get 10 games here to feel ourselves in. Like, you get you know, maybe as a goalie you get, you know, you probably split a game, you know, because you got to get both guys in there. So best case, your starter maybe gets he gets a full game and then half of another, you know, because you got to get the other guy in there for a little bit. So it's a tough situation, and it's really going to be, you know, whoever gets acclimated. And I found, you know, I think that the Twitterverse is blowing up right now about people saying like, whoever wins this year gets an asterisk, right? But in my mind, like, this is going to be one of the hardest years ever to win it. I think it's a huge, huge, you know, obviously Stanley Cup's huge for anybody, but if you can make it happen in a year like this, it's, you know, all the power to you, because I think it's going to be challenging, no doubt.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. Going into this, though, the potential of seeing Edmonton and Calgary in round one was there. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, being an Oilers guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's super disappointing, right? And it's fun seeing, you know, people like you guys talk about the Battle of Alberta, and, you know, where I grew up with it, even when both Edmonton and Calgary weren't very good. And those are still the games that you had to watch, right? And now, obviously, it's getting the national media attention because of the Cassian and Tkachuk thing. But, man, those were some good hockey games. And what a series that would have been. I mean, the storylines with Cassian and Cassian, Tkachuk, you got Lucic, you got James Neal, like, so many storylines. You know, David Riddick flipping the stick against
him,
you know, like, storyline after storyline, right? So it's I'm hoping maybe there's still a way you know, to make it happen, but you know, it's yeah, I mean, hey, you can't beat watching Chicago play. I don't care how old their team is. I mean, still gonna be a fun series to watch. And you know, you put McDavid on the ice against
anybody, it's gonna be so much fun.
I'll watch the hockey game.
It's gonna be so much fun to watch. It is.
If it happens, I mean, still, with, you know, I could get into a whole that'll say that for another day. But Jesse, looking, I talked to you a little bit about this, kind of going off the NHL a little bit. You know, we had talked about, like, kind of learning the business side of things now that you're a head coach rather than, you know, like, assistant coaches, you're still learning. But what's been the biggest challenge, surprise kind of thing that you didn't really see on that side of the ice as a player? Now that you're, like, in that role?
Yeah, I mean, probably, like you said, like, just, you know, I've got, you know, a lot more familiar with the business side of things, right? And when you're playing, it's all about the hockey, right? That's the only thing that matters. I think, you know, when I've got to be, you know, the head coach and essentially, you know, I have an owner that hands me, you know, his wallet and says, like, you know, make sure you take care of me. Like, you know, I think that it matters, you know, and sometimes it's easy to think about that, or it's easy to forget about that from a player perspective. And you're like, oh man, like, these owners are killing it. They're making a lot of money. But in reality, like, you know, from our league to the ECHL, like, a lot of these teams, they survive by the skin of their teeth every year. Right. And it's, you know, when you really look at the numbers, it's something. I mean, it's a lot of money, and it's, but, you know, really just trying to do that, and then manage a staff of, you know, I got 19 to 21 of you yahoos, and then, you know, another 4-man staff of crew. So I think for me, the biggest probably learning curve is just learning how to deal with that many different personalities, right? Because nobody's got the same personality, and you can't treat everybody the same. Some kids need kid gloves, and other people need a kick in the ass. So that's kind of the challenge of the job.
Yeah. So I noticed you when you were the coach, when you were the assistant coach in Huntsville, you wore two different titles. You were the assistant coach, and then you're also the director of player personnel. And then you've also been the assistant coach and the director of hockey operations. What's that like, wearing two different hats in one season?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a coach in pro hockey, I mean, you wear about 30 different hats. You know, we're the head coach, we're the travel coordinator, you know, we're the schedule maker, like, you name it, we do it.
Repairman.
Yeah, like, yeah, seriously. I mean, there's been times, I mean, I've been the guy on the bus that's, you know, spinning the jack or holding a flashlight for the bus, like, you name it, you know, we do it. And I wake up every day, not exactly. And that's when I talk about, you know, putting out fires. Like, I wake up every day and not know, you know, I go to work not knowing what the problem's going to be that day. And, you know, sometimes it's going to be a bus that's going to break down. Sometimes it's going to be a guy whose feelings going to hurt. You know, guy's girlfriend broke up with him. You know, family members passed away. You name it. Like, it's, I never know what it's going to be that day. And very, you know, the funny part is very rarely is it ever hockey. It's always something else. And that's the fun of the job.
Yeah. Cause the hockey's the easy part. That's the easy part. Handling those problems are the easy part.
And I can attest to Jesse's character with all that too. Cause I mean, from my side of things, like, my grandpa passed this year, he was the first one to come give me a hug. Like, right. And it was right before a game we played. That was in Huntsville. So even something like two years ago when Derek Brown had all the head problems, and you know, a lot of coaches that are maybe more old school would have been like, nah, you're fine, suck it up, keep playing. Like, you know, Jesse was on, especially being like an Edmonton guy, like, you were on his side trying to help him for what was best for his career, whether it was stopping to play hockey or what. So, you know, even though there are a lot of fires that we deal with, you know, from what I've seen the last 2 years, Jesse's been pretty much the best at putting them out.
All right, I gotta ask it now. This is gonna become a thing now. Every yep. guest that we have, what's your what's your best travel story? Because I mean, this is you guys. We talked about it last week. I can't remember what we had something about Birmingham. We were talking about a travel story in Birmingham. Now I need to know, what's your favorite travel mess story?
Sure, yeah, pretty easy for me. So we were on our way. I was in Huntsville. We were on our way to Columbus, Georgia. And our bus broke down probably about 70 miles probably outside Columbus. Our radiator was toast, so the bus was smoking. It looked like a steam engine coming out the back. So the radiator was toast. We were on our way there. We were going to be, you know, probably right on schedule. But so what happened was, and these buses they're huge, right? So we had a guy on our team that was about 6'7", 6'8", so big guy. So we had to stop at Lowe's and get a big 10-gallon bucket. And what we'd had to do was we had a line on the bus, basically, and we were filling from the tap on the bus. Everybody was filling water bottles. And we'd pass the water bottles up, dump it in the bucket, and then those would go back. And then as soon as the 10-gallon bucket got full, Justin Tateson was the name. He'd have to get off the bus, and he's the only guy that could reach. We'd take the cover off. He'd pour the 10-gallon bucket in, get about half of the water on him. Then they'd put the cover on, and then we'd drive maybe 5 miles at, you know, 25, 30 miles an hour. And then as we're driving, we get the line going again, and the whole team is a good team.
It's a team, yeah. I was about to say, it's a team building exercise right there.
Right. Yeah. So we got there for the game, you know, and the other team comes over and they go, okay, great. How much time do you need to get ready? And we say, oh, you know, can we have? And at that point, you're at the mercy of the home team.
Yeah.
We're already an hour late for the game. The fans are there, and we're like, okay, can we have half an hour? Right? Because half an hour is not asking a lot, you think, but in that world it is. They're like, you can have 5 minutes. So we were on the ice, you know, in about 5 minutes. The national anthem was going, our goalie was taking shots. So we didn't even get a warm up, went out and played, and we actually won the game. Don't ask me how, but, you know, that's a story I don't think I'll ever forget.
Yeah, that one came quick. You knew which story to pull for that one.
I mean, I feel like I've been in a four-letter league for, you know, about 10 years now. So I feel like I could probably write a book about some of the stories that have happened.
You can't make any of this stuff up, too. Like, some of the things I've heard, even from Jesse and guys that I've played with that were, like, Jason Price, guys that have been in the league for a long time, like, these stories from these guys are so absurd that it's impossible to think and make it up. It's just, it has to be true.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've never heard that story either. So
yeah, it's wild. It really is. And I wish, you know, in hindsight, I wish I would have got a little bit more video footage of it to appreciate it. But at the time, I probably didn't appreciate it as much as I do now. You know, I think in the time you're in the moment, and But in hindsight, it was a pretty funny story.
So the movie Slapshot is pretty much dead on with the travel stories. It's exactly how it is.
100%, right? Like you basically like, you know, you got to travel the next day, like flip a coin and let's see if we get there. Cause that's what the chances. It's 50-50.
Jeez. You know?
Especially 2 years ago. Well, I think it was every other road trip our bus broke down. It was your first year in Fayetteville. I think we broke down or had some sort of issue 12 times, 13 times, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's year to year. Like some years, you know, last year we were lucky. We very limited, maybe one or two issues. And the year before that, it was like we couldn't catch a break. And it's just year to year.
Is there a focus issue? Like, is there ever like a Jeker, you've played, you both obviously played, you coach. Is there like a focus issue? Like once that kind of like a travel problem happens, your bus breaks down, you like kind of lose your focus on like what is ahead of you, or are you guys just used to it at that point that you just know, okay, the game's coming up. We still have to kind of keep in mind what's about to happen or what's going on in your minds during this process.
Yeah, I mean, the funny part for me as a coach is, you know, and this is part of coaching, but it, depending on which side I'm on, I sell it, you know, I try and put a positive spin on it. So if we're the team waiting for somebody, you know, I'll talk to my team and I'll sell it like, hey, they're the ones that have to go through, you know, they're the ones that have been on the bus. They're having to figure it out. Not a lot of time to get ready. You know, they've been thinking about this. They don't want to be here. And then I've been on the other end of it where it's like, you know, you're coming in late and I'll sell it to my team. Like, hey, they've had to wait for us. You know, they're the ones that it's tough for them to stay into it and stay ready. So as a coach, I mean, my job is just manipulating information and trying to sell it to the guy. So, I mean, I'll take whatever stance you want me to take and be able to probably give you an argument either.
Jeker, what about you? What's going on in your mind during these kind of situations?
I've been lucky kind of in the fact that I've never really had an issue going to a game. It was always coming home. So it's frustrating, especially the super long trips, like a Pensacola back to Fayetteville or a Quad City. We didn't break down on the way back, but if we had something like that, especially after like a 3-3, you're like, just, I want to go home. Like, we've been on the road for 3 days. Like, it's just tiring. But I think it was 2 years ago, it got to a point for me where it was kind of just funny. Like, it happened so frequently.
You're just used to it.
That it was. Yeah, it was just one of those things where, like, we would joke about it and be like, I wonder what happens this time. Like, a blown tire or
like you,
something like that.
Like, you know, a 3-hour trip is going to go into a 5-hour trip. That's, like, kind of like what you're planning.
We had, Jesse will remember this one. We played Roanoke in Roanoke, which is 3 hours away. And our bus broke down probably like, what, Jesse, 20, 25 miles outside of Roanoke, and we were stuck there until the next morning.
Yeah, like it turned into a 3-hour trip, turned into like a 19-hour trip.
Oof.
Yeah, it's something like that where you're so close to home, and it should be just an easy type thing, and it turned into a nightmare. So,
it's so complicated.
Yeah, especially that year, I was just kind of like, I just laughed it off at that point. So,
you know, the crazy part though is like, everybody thinks like everybody wants to like come on a trip, right? All these fans and people, they're like, they think it's like an awesome time where really like stuffed in a sardine can with 25 people like is literally my nightmare now. And everybody's like, oh, it's probably awesome. Like, you guys just hang out, but really like everybody's laying in their bunks the whole time. And it's like, it's funny, like people's perception of, you know, what it's actually like.
Yeah, especially if you're a rookie or like a first or second year guy, when you get like one of the real tiny bunks, then you're really stuck. Like, it was, I'm sure you had good bunks when you like got older and when you're playing, and I got lucky this year and had a nice one. But
yeah, I was a little bit smaller, so I didn't have to.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't have
me in a closet, I'd probably fit.
Yeah, I mean, I had a trip, and when I played for Toledo, I had a trip where we went Toledo to Wichita, which was 16 hours. We played two there, and then we stopped in Kansas City on the home. And our coach decided to take 20 – like, he took injured guys with him. So we had, like, 24 or 25 guys on one of those buses, players. And there were three of us that – we did, like, credit card roulette to see who slept on the floor. And three of us actually got the floor both ways. So 16 hours there, 16 hours back on the floor. And I mean, those buses are a little bit nicer, but it's still like, it was tough, man. So yeah, people don't really understand what we go through on those things.
Oof. That is definitely tough. Jinker, you brought up something that I've always wanted to ask a SPHL coach or ECHL coach this, and you're a goaltender, so it's great that I can ask you this. You guys play a lot of back-to-backs. You guys play a lot of three nights, two nights in a row. Yeah. And a lot of guys, like in the NHL, we look at goalies and we say, okay, if it's a back-to-back, you're normally switching your goalies.
Yeah.
What's it like having to make that decision? Because I know here in Jacksonville, we had a goalie during our first season. He played just about every game. And my brother and I would wonder, like, when is he going to get a night off? What's that thought process like? What's that decision-making process like?
Yeah, like, listen, I don't want to take too many shots at NHL guys, but they're a little bit of prima donnas, right? Like, you think about like they complain about back to back nights while they're traveling via private planes, fully catered. Not to mention like they don't have to touch their gear. Like, I think that's what some people forget too, right? Like, so say we play, you know, we play Friday night in Birmingham, and then we have to go to Macon. So you know, you're looking at like a 7-hour drive. So you leave after the game, you pull into Macon at like 3 or 4 a.m. But then we still have to go unpack the bus.
Yeah.
Like, we have to go unpack the bus and hang the gear up, get the room ready, and then go check in at the hotel, you know, and these NHL guys, right? Like, they're on the plane, they get off fully catered, then they go home. So like, I mean, I think it's just something that at our level, you just, it is what it is, you know, and it's, you know, I heard a funny story, actually. The head coach that I used to work for in Huntsville, he played, he was playing in the IHL back in the last lockup, which is St. Louis Blues guys on their team. And Jamal Mayers was on his team, and they went golfing. And, you know, those guys were actually really, they bought in and played the full IHL schedule that year until the lockup. You guys that did that, and I remember he was telling me a story of they were playing like three games and three nights with travel, and I remember he was telling me a story, like, Jamal, they got off the bus and Jamal's like, we're playing today, like, I don't think I can play today, you know. And it's like, those guys, like, they have no idea, right? And it's, I think that's why you know, when some of these guys grind out long careers in the SPHL, the ECHL, the American League, you know, you meet some NHL guys who really respect the grind of what those guys have been through.
Yeah, it definitely seems like that grind, because it's like, we're so used to seeing the NHL guys, like, you split time, you get a back-to-back, and you know one goalie's playing and then the other goalie's getting the night off. What's that mental process like? Or how, as a goalie, when you played, how are you preparing for back-to-back-to-back night games where you're traveling so many miles?
Yeah, I mean, I think I only played a 3-3 once. So, played a lot of back-to-backs, but the 3-3, the only 3-3 I ever played was because the other goalie on our team was on the IR. So I had to go a weekend by myself where I was the only goalie. So we had an emergency backup. And so I had to play all three. And it's, you know, I guess I've always wondered, like, you know, players have to do it. Like, why goalies do it? You know, I've always wondered that myself. Like, you know, if the players have to do it, so should the goalies. If you feel like you need them, but I love to play. I mean, I miss playing. I love to play. And if you want to be in there, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Jigger, your dog's going nuts over there, buddy. I thought my dog would be crazy during
the
show.
He was sleeping the whole time. I was so excited. And then he decided to pick
a play up. So. My dog's over here. He's listening. He's trying to find out where that noise is coming.
Big Leo. Oh yeah, he was laying there on the couch being perfect, and now he's wants to play. So
so I got a question for you. I don't know if you hopefully you remember it for in the season. You had a guy do the Kucherov move in a shootout.
Yeah.
And I have to ask you, if he misses that, if that doesn't go in, what are you doing to him? Are you yelling at him on the bench, or, cuz this is a game, this is for points here, and he pulls this move out?
No, I'm honestly, like, you know, I think Travis will probably let you know, but like, overtime and shootouts, I'm way less intense tense than I am during an actual game, you know? And I think for me, it just comes down to, like, at that point, we've already got a point. It's a skills competition at that point. I know other coaches are really, really super intense, but for me, like, I enjoy that part of it. Like, I think it's really exciting. I think, you know, he tried to move and, you know, listen, sometimes it works, and there's no doubt, like, I'm going to give the guy some crap if he makes a bad move. I'll be the first guy to give somebody some crap if they make a bad move. You know, might end up on the video session on Monday if it's not a great move, but to me, it's never, I mean, get out and get an opportunity. I thought it was a great move. I mean, it worked out.
Yeah, it went in.
It worked out great, right? So, you know, I credit to him for having the stones to try.
Is he talking about that on the bench? Is he like, okay, I'm going to go with this move? Or is this like, that's such a difficult thing to do. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, I obviously am not that great at hockey, but like, if I try that move, I'm going to miss like 90% of the time.
You know, the crazy part is like,
good job, Louis.
The funny part was, like, the guy who did the move, we never saw him do it. And we never heard him talk about it. So, like, it was completely out of left field. Like, I think if you would have had a camera on me when it happened, I would have been like, what happened? So, it was awesome. It was really awesome.
I saw the video. I saw it retweeted on your Twitter. I was like, oh, I have to bring this one up for sure. So what are your practices like, Jeeker? What are his practices like? Are they tough? Are they hard on you, or is it like a kind of just a go through the motions, but go through drills and things like that?
No, Jess is very good at kind of recognizing like what time of the year it is, how many games we have that weekend, different things like that. Personally, I loved Jesse's practice because they were super competitive, but he kind of demanded perfection out of us, especially on like the earlier drills. Like, I remember a couple times this year we had some very poor starts to practice that I forget what the one practice, it was supposed to be like a flow day on like a Monday or something. He's like, fuck it, we're doing battle drills. We were doing like one-on-ones and stuff like that. Like, so, and it's good. I mean, it's good for us too, because especially on those like Monday, Tuesday type practices where you're kind of tired from the weekend. Some guys went out, like, they might not be feeling their best. You know, it's kind of good. I personally like to, you know, kind of get into it early for the weekend, but you know, Jesse was very good at setting up, like, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, just kind of, I don't want to say they were easier, but they were more focused on specific things, and they never went too long. It was never, you know, 2 hours or an hour and a half. It was 40, 45 minutes. And, I mean, the sole purpose of a practice, especially in our league where you're not in the NHL, so you're not playing every other night, it's more kind of like a college schedule where you're playing Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you have the weekdays to work. And it was very nice how it was kind of set up, you know, to specifically work on a, you know, power play or a penalty kill, especially for us. Like, you know, being on the power play, there were times this year where our power play was terrible. So to be able to have that, you know, that set Thursday to do, like, 20 minutes of power play was great. But I mean, I loved our practice. I had no complaints.
Yeah. It's is there, Jesse, a drill? Like, what's your favorite drill, your go-to drill? If you could pick one drill that you think is like the most effective or the most fun to watch, what drill is that? I know we're getting into like the in-depth hockey analysis here. And this is what I love about the game is these drills. Well, what is your go-to drill?
Yeah, my favorite drill is, and Travis will probably know it, it's called the Carlisle Chaos. So it's a great drill. You get a couple point shots, you get a 2-on-1, you get a 2-on-1, you get a 3-on-1, and then you get a 3-on-2. So for me, like, that's I think any drill where you're utilizing a bunch of guys, you know, getting guys moving, making sure that you know, like Travis said, I'm a big fan of competition, and I don't have a lot of like so-called flow days. Those aren't really up my alley. I'm more so, you know, we're going on the ice with the purpose of trying to accomplish something that day. And, but yeah, I mean, Carlisle Chaos would certainly be my favorite. And It's a big Thursday drill for us.
Very happy you didn't say the pinwheel. The least favorite drill I've ever done in my life. What's... Just because it's a really simple, like, that's a flow drill. Like, that's like one of the first drills you do in practice. And it's, I don't think I ever had a problem with figuring it out, but in the 2 years that we did it, every single practice that Jesse put on a practice plan somehow it got screwed up. It's really just like a circle, and then you get a pass and going for a shot. And I'm telling you, and there's the guys like that have been doing this drill for 2 years that have been on our team from like day one that still in February of this year would screw it up.
Yeah, it's a simple drill. It's a simple drill that if you're not paying attention, it's going to go to shit. And there's a lot of days went to shit, but
yes,
we were putting it in there for a reason. And usually on a day where maybe the guys needed a kick in the ass, we was kind of put in there on purpose because it teed it up for us as a staff to set that up, I guess.
Were you screaming at the boys if they messed it up?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Lamp the whistle a little bit. I'll have a few choice words if it's one of those days. If it's one of those days where they need it, I'm pretty calm person. I'm pretty patient. If I get to the point where I'm agitated, things can boil over a little bit.
Some practices, yeah. But
that's awesome. So now I get into the Fayetteville talk and your coaching career. And you guys had a pretty solid team this season. You guys were going far. You guys, from what Jeeker has told us, you guys really had a good shot at making it to the finals. And I saw on your Twitter that you talked about how this team that you have here is going to be like the standard for teams to come. What makes this team this year that team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I did say that, and I do believe that. Like I don't know if I'll ever coach a team that was, you know, as dominant as this team. To go 36-9, have a stretch where we went something like 16 or 17 games without a regulation loss. Like it's truly interesting, and not only that, but you know, we dealt with so many guys getting called up to the ECHL. And for most teams and most normal situations, that's, that can be the kiss of death for some teams. And for us, it just didn't really matter who we had in our lineup or what the situation was. We just found ways to win. And I think that to me was really cool and really fun to be around. And the guys were just so focused and so detailed and, allowed us to win a lot of games. And it's super disappointing that we didn't get a chance to fully see what we were capable of and what we got to do, what we would have been able to do. But that's the way of the world, right?
Yeah.
Everybody got the short end of the stick somewhere during COVID. So for us, this is our short end of the stick, and I hope it's going to make us better here in the long run. And But it's something I'll always look back on and think a lot of really good memories about this past season.
Yeah, you guys definitely were on a roll, and I mean it's really just sucks that you guys could not have the season didn't get a finish the proper way, and it definitely sucks. But I have a question for you, like for like the off season. I'm freaking out over this because I love being able to pick a coach's brain and someone who's actually in the front office. I get you are technically in the front office. Yep. With this team. How are you going about scouting players, looking at players, signing them, picking and choosing? How do you go about that?
Yeah, actually, we had a meeting. Corey and I had a meeting today kind of talking about our recruiting and where we were at and doing a catch-up because we're not face-to-face a whole bunch here. So we did kind of a catch up and an update, and actually it's been weird. It's been strange because it's been slow. It's been really, really slow. And I think as a coach, like it's frustrating because, you know, I want to get things moving but really I can only go as fast as, COVID's going to allow me to go. Right. And there's a lot of guys that are waiting to see what's going to happen and slow playing a little bit. So yeah, it's really frustrating. And I know I'm not the only coach or organization that's going through that. It's pretty much widespread among us that it's just everything's at a standstill. And you'll get a few guys here and there, but you know, I've gone at times like, you know, 6, 7, 8 days between recruiting calls. And you know, if you know, most normally in a normal circumstance, if I'm going 6, 7, 8 hours in between recruiting calls, that's strange. You know, so now to go 6, 7, 8 days, it's, you know, I'd be lying if I said like I wasn't, you know, nervous, just the unknown, right? The unknown's always intimidating and you know, a little bit scary. And that's the part that's certainly a little bit worrisome. But I think at some point here, things are going to get back to normal and guys are going to want to start getting prepared for next year. But until that happens, I'm always going to be a little bit worried.
Yeah. So how do you do your scout? Like, do you have staff members who are specifically in charge of like scouting, like the college systems and the junior systems in Canada? Like, do you have people for that, or is that something that you are doing as well?
No. Yeah. It's just Corey and I and connections and dealing with agents and college coaches and major junior coaches and word of mouth and talking to guys like Travis. And, you know, like I think back, like, you know, Travis got us, you know, a guy last year who ended up being a really good player for us. And sometimes that's how it works. It's just a connection. But it's, I don't know how it happens, but you know, it's funny. All of us coaches end up talking to the same pool of players. So, however we get their contact information, different ways for each guy, but, you're trying to do as much homework as you can on those players and talk to somebody who coached them, talk to somebody who played with them, find some connection where you feel like they might be a good fit for you. And a lot of times it's a shot in the dark.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's so, you wear so many hats right now. That's wild. The scouting department, the head coach, that's a lot of juggling going on. That's for sure. That's crazy.
You name it, you know, and I think they really say, like, you know, they really say that the truest form of a coach is probably at the American Hockey League level, because that's all those guys do is coach. You know, even at the NHL level, like, there's a little bit more that goes into it with, you know, the media and dealing with systems and things like that. Where the American League, you know, like, you're not doing any recruiting, you're not doing any apartment travel, scouting, anything like that, and you're given a system by the NHL team. So, you know, the truest form of coaching is probably at the American Hockey League level.
Yeah, that's a lot to juggle, and I'm getting like anxiety just thinking about how, like, having to deal with all of that. Now I've got two more questions to hit you on.
Sure.
And one of them has to do with the way you selected your captains this season. It's been brought up before. Jinkers brought it up before. Corey brought it up. How did that go about? Tell us about how you chose your captains this season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think for me, you know, we wanted to get away this year after we had our team picked and do a little team building, because I think it's important to separate when the team's first picked and get some alone time, get to know. So we went away to a camp and, you know, his camp was in the bush and, you know, we got up at 4 a.m. We woke the boys up at 4 a.m. We went on a little jog and then, you know, we got the boys into a river and it was probably about 5:30, 5:15. By the time the fellas got into the river, water might have been a little chilly, not too bad. You're down here in North.
Yeah, you never stepped into that water, buddy. It was freezing cold, man.
It's you know, the water wasn't too bad, but it was a beautiful morning. The sun was coming up. You know, the steam was coming off the lake. It was terrific, and you know, we made the guys. They did about 3/4 of a mile walking upstream in water that varied from, you know, probably just above their ankles to neck high. And, you know, they had to do it holding one another, touching one another. And For me, like that's the epitome of you know, when you want to name the people that are going to be leading the charge for you, because I think, you know, that was going to be a representation of our season. And, you know, we were going to go through some times that trouble was going to be ankle high, and we were going to go through some times where trouble was going to be neck high. Right. And we had those guys that were leading the charge and leading our group. And it did just happen by chance that those guys were out front. And I think that to me was a pretty good indicator that we selected the right people. So we announced it. We announced it in the water. We didn't give them a heads up that it was coming. They didn't know. And I think, now that I'm here sitting in the summertime, like, honestly, I'll probably do it again next year. And that'll probably be the rite of passage to become the leadership group for the marksman. And, you know, something that as a coach, you're trying to find things that stimulate the guys and that they're going to talk about. And here we are almost a year later, and it still gets brought up with, you know, Travis and other guys on our team. So obviously, we did something right there.
Starting a new tradition.
I definitely won't ever forget that water, that's for sure. and the 2 mile run at 4 a.m. But it was fun. It was fun, I give you that.
Yeah, after the fact, it's fun. You know, not the time, but yeah, I think in hindsight, it was something that the guys got through together, and it was a challenge for them. And it was fun to see, and it was fun to watch them, and just the joy. I don't know if they would have celebrated harder if we won a championship or when they got out of that water at 6:45. So it's tough to say which celebration was bigger.
Yeah, we didn't have breakfast yet either, so I think we were all excited to just go eat.
Yeah,
that was for sure. But I mean, hey, it did its job, man. Like, even I remember, even like in Quad City and like later trips in our year, we were still. It was either we were giving Max shit for. Brian was giving Max shit for being named in the river, or just like talking about it and stuff. So, I mean, it definitely kept brought us closer together, but it definitely obviously did its job. So, props to you guys, because I had never done anything like that in college or pro or anything like that. So, I'm excited to see that next year.
Yeah, definitely seemed like quite the experience from the video that was posted. So, last question, rounding it out. You're a goalie guy. Are you a big goalie gear guy? Are you into the style of goalie, the new pads and stuff like that? What's your take?
No, actually, unfortunately, I was never a big gear guy.
I feel like that's a thing. That's the thing for a lot of goalies.
I know. I always took my masks really seriously, and I still have all my masks. No, gear was never something that I ever really like got too into. So I played with a lot of guys that were serious like gear guys, and then, you know, I'd have some conversations with them and I'd be like, holy smokes.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not that.
People get wild with that stuff, man. My brother is definitely one of those guys, is big on goalie gear.
Yeah. Goalies are weird, man. Like, yeah, I know, like everybody says that, but like, it's true. I was a goalie, but like, I think I wasn't necessarily always like a goalie.
Yeah. You
know? There's some guys that, you know, they're different. They're a different breed.
They're definitely monsters is what I like to call them. That's for sure.
Seriously.
Jaker, you have anything else you want to bring up? Anything, any stories about your coach? This is your chance right now. You're retired. He can't do anything to you now.
Man, any stories about him?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I've said it to Jesse before, and I would say it for the rest of my career, is that Jesse was my favorite coach. If you look at my, like, I guess you would say even college, like, Jesse was the first coach, and I could attribute this to Pete and Corey as well, and when I was there, when they were there, but they kind of just allowed me to be myself and kind of go about my game the way that I did. Like, it was different for me in the East Coast League, where it was, you're constantly worried about your position, you're constantly worried about if you're gonna play or if you're gonna, you know, obviously you had to work for it. Jesse was never gonna give me ice time, and Corey was never gonna give me ice time, but like, especially this year, like I went through a bad stretch for like 10 games, something like that, and I was always reassured, like, we're not going to trade you. We're not going to, we might take some ice time. We're not going to sit you. We're not going to, you know, like, that was the biggest thing for me. And that's, I mean, if you look at my stats, that's my last 2 years or my two best years, pro and even college too. Like, it's cool to see two young guys. Jesse's, you're 29 now, right? Did I get that
turned
right?
30.
Just turned 30? Okay. So
over the hill now.
Oh boy. Oh boy. But like, even with Jesse being 30 and Corey's 28 or 29, it's like, it's kind of cool to see all these guys that are, yeah, it's cool to see the coaches that are in their mid 40s and mid 50s and been doing it for a while, but to see the success that two young guys have had and to be able to turn someone, you turn my career around, to be honest with you, like going from, you know, being healthy scratched and playing for six teams, no matter where, what league it was in, like to winning the award I did to, you know, helping our team get to where we were. This year, I mean, I don't care what anyone says, we're going to win. Like, there's no question in my mind with the guys we had. It's kind of hard to put into words, like you said about winning a championship. It's just kind of hard to put into words. I had these conversations with Max every day, and it was like, we're going to win. Like, there's no doubt about it. So, and props to Jesse for single-handedly turning around a franchise. Like, to go from my first year there when we had Hawaiian shirt night on a road trip because it was so, like, just to try to keep us from, like, having depression, like, to where we were winning a playoff game at home to, like I said, this year, you know, we should have won if everything would have played out the way it did. So I can only expect, you know, greater things for Jesse and his career and for the organization. So I don't really have any too many. I don't want to say any too many stories. And the guy thinks he has some sick hands out there in practice, but I don't know about that.
That's some nice things. You guys have it down. Make sure you bring your guests on and say nice things about them.
Hey, Oliver.
It's good business plan.
We've had our past three guests have pumped Jeeker's tires. So this is the first time he's ever really initiated.
Get out of here! I pump tires.
You do a nice return. But it's always I ask the Jeeker story, the favorite Jeeker story, and then the pumping the tires gets back, because apparently you were a great guy all season long. Didn't do anything wrong. There's no problems. There's no bad stories about you. Has one. Yeah, you.
Oh, you could have seen me for about, I don't know, probably, what was that, Jess? Mid-November till right around, I came back from my head about right after the New Year's. I was pretty goddamn bad at hockey. So there were definitely times where.
Traveling through a tough stretch, but.
It was bad, man.
Man, we all do, right? That's the beauty of the game, that it's, you know, it's been such a long season and you're able to come back from stuff like that. And, you know, it's cool to hear from guys that, you know, I guess I'm not fully, we'll see. Like, the puck hasn't dropped yet, so I'm not 100% sure Travis isn't coming back. I'm always still going to leave a little bit of hope out there. And then if any, you know, if any other coaches are watching this, you know, he's definitely coming back, so don't bother calling him.
I haven't gotten any phone calls yet, so don't worry.
But, you know, for us, it's great to hear from guys that, you know, no longer are with our organization and seeing where some of these guys go and their careers and, you know, starting families. It's awesome to catch up with guys all the time and see them from basically when they're basically kids when they're with me. And then, you know, the next time I catch up with them, some of them might have their own kids, which is utterly terrifying to think about for some of these guys. But, it's always great to catch up and talk hockey.
Yeah, it was for sure great having you on. You know, during that last like bit of conversation, I thought of like two more questions, and I'm like, but I'll ask them anyways. I had it on my list that I needed to talk to you about the coaching changes in the NHL that happened. That was actually on my list of questions that I needed to ask you. So we're getting some bonus content in here right now.
Let's go.
What with the season, the NHL that we just saw, we saw a lot of coaches fired. And we talked about it earlier with the fact that coaches get recycled, and we saw a lot of them be recycled. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, hey? Like, it seems like one team everybody's waiting for one team to do it first. And then once that first domino falls, it's like, boom, 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 boom. And it's been, I mean, there's, but you see how like a coaching change, you look at how it affected the Blues last year, right? Like it's, I think it can go one of two ways. Like it can work out, it can work out really good, or worst case for some of these teams, it's just going to leave you in the same place, which is pretty close to last place anyway. So sometimes what do you have to lose, right? And, you know, if I've learned anything in this business, that, you know, I'm at the right level, because if it comes down between me and the players, I know I'm going to win that battle right now. But once you get to the NHL level and you have guys making, you know, you've got a guy like Ovi, he's got a $100 million contract over the life of it. And a coach, you know, who's making $2 million for 3 years. It's, I can tell you who's going to win that battle yeah. every time. Right. So it's a different animal up there. It really is. But I mean, some of these changes, you're going to see how they're going to play out, right? Like a guy like Jim Montgomery, who had to leave Dallas for some reasons, but had an ultra talented team. You know, somebody slides into that role, and is it out of the question that, you know, the Stars have enough talent to win a cup? You know, it's like Craig Berube walks into St. Louis last year and takes over a team that's loaded with talent, wins a Stanley Cup, and all of a sudden, you know, he's got a contract, he's got job security. So those are the jobs that you might only get one or two chances to be an NHL head coach, and you better make the most of it, because you might never get a chance again.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the teams now tried to emulate what the Blues did and have a quick reset halfway through the season and maybe change their season around to make the playoffs like the Blues did, maybe go on a Cinderella story run just like that. But now I have my last question. This is it. Unless something sparks my mind again for another question, your coaching style, you've developed, you're still a very young coach. You've only been in the league coaching for just a few years now. How, what has gone into your coaching style? What have you been looking at? How have you been getting your drills, getting your style, developing your own personal coaching abilities?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it really comes down to, you know, my mentor is in Huntsville. The guy I was assistant coach for 3 years, and we had a lot of success there together, coaching. And I think we found a recipe that works, and, you know, we've tweaked a few things that work for us. But really, I mean, for me, I think the key is just trying to be myself. I think if, like anything, if you're being fake or trying to be somebody that you're not, the players see through that pretty quickly. And you know, for me, I got so many guys that are ultra talented and ultra smart hockey guys. And I think a lot of my job is just trying to connect. You know, I want to connect with these guys and have real, honest, genuine conversations with them. And I think, you know, Travis will probably agree with me that, you know, once you get to junior and for sure your pro career, I mean, there was coaches that I had, especially in pro hockey, that I could go weeks without saying a word to him, and then vice versa to me. You know, so I think I always knew that was somebody that I didn't want to be. You know, I didn't want to be that guy that, you know, only talking to your players when you need something from them. And, you know, and then you're asking them to do things and you don't have a genuine connection with them. So I think for me, it's, I'd rather be the coach that, I guess how I look at it is after you lose a game and the coach comes in, I always felt like I played harder for the guys that after we lost the game, I was more disappointed for him than I was in fear. You know, the guys that coach in fear and you come in and they're going to threaten your job and they're going to yell at you and scream at you. Those are the guys that I just didn't enjoy playing for. But, you know, the coach that when we came in after the game and I genuinely felt like I let him down. Those were the guys that, you know, I felt like I wanted to play harder for, and I'd run through a wall for those guys. And ultimately, if you get 19 guys that are willing to run through a wall with you, you're going to be successful. So, I mean, I think that's what I try and do. Sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. And it's just trying to find the right guys that fit with my personality and, you know, also adapt me to my group of guys.
Yeah, well, something's definitely working. You got 2 years in Fayetteville, and then you've been killing it since. So something's definitely working. And I normally talk about how Jeeker has been like the one responsible for the change because he's been in Fayetteville for 2 years, and then he's made the change. But really, it comes down to you. You've been making the change. You're the difference maker there in Fayetteville. I appreciate you coming on. Obviously a bunch more conversation points came after that, but I'll let you go. We can hopefully we can have you on again soon and pick this back up. So we appreciate you coming on. Jeeker, you have anything else?
Nah, enjoy Fayetteville. Stay safe.